Welcome you, Porch Talk. We're going to start the show off with a song called Swamp Thing. I'm not going to share anything about it right now. Some of you will get it. Brian is going to share about the process behind that song during the show. All right, here we go. Here's Swamp Thing. Oh, and not to shock you, turn your volume down and readjust when the song comes on. It comes strong out the gate. All right, welcome you to another episode of Porch Talk. This is your host, Alan, and tonight I am burning the phone lines down in the New Orleans and Ocean Springs area to catch up with Brian Riles of the Green Mantles. So, Brian, how you doing tonight, brother?
Doing good.
Well, man, it's great to have you on the show, and just for out the gate, man, are you originally from that area your whole life?
I was born in West Palm Beach, Florida, but when I was about a year old, we moved to the New Orleans area. We've kind of lived right around, either in New Orleans or around New Orleans for most of my life afterwards.
Well, just your music background, vinyls from your parents, or was it a song on the radio? What got you into music?
I think I was really into, I guess, maybe being a child of the 70s or something. 50s music was a really big deal at the time, you know, the retro side of 50s coming back. And I was always into, you know, Elvis and that sort of thing. And I also think, not so much from a musical point, at least in it originally, but I really loved Kiss. And I later got into them as musicians. But at the time in the 70s, it was like, yeah, the Kiss was right up my alley. And Elvis, again, as if in all the 50s kind of stuff as well. So most music that I knew came from my parents, I think, playing 50s music, maybe some 60s stuff in there too, like the Beach Boys or something.
I got you.
But yeah, so that was my earliest influences.
And so, man, just growing up in the New Orleans area, man, a little bit about what was that like, just coming up in school and from the time you picked up the instrument, what was growing up like? What was you into?
Well, I said, in the 70s, I used to do these little Elvis impersonation things with the record playing in the background. So I was really kind of obsessed with that kind of thing. And then, you know, when I never really had an interest necessarily in playing instruments, but I just liked the idea of performing, I think, you know, from that very early on. And in New Orleans, you're definitely exposed through Mardi Gras and just the city itself. There's a lot of music all around you,
All
and
the
I think
time.
that, just from everywhere. And you got to think, there was a lot of dance element to the music, which eventually made its way into, what I really is a big theme of what Green Mantles became. But there's a lot of shuffles, and there's a lot, I mean, it's a drum term, but I mean, it's just not, maybe not everyone knows what a shuffle is, but it's those kind of rhythms, those grooves, and those kind of, I guess, from jazz music and from rockabilly and
Right.
country or whatever. So and so that, I think that's a big part of just growing up. And I also think the influence of the environment, it's a, it's kind of a swampy, hot environment. So I think that does influence, in at least in some way or another, your tones or sort of the way that you're, the way that you approach things in life, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I spent quite a bit of time in New Orleans, and like it's off. It's like stepping into a new world almost.
Yeah, sure. It's different than a lot of other cities in the United States.
Yeah, it's a melting pot, and it's got its own flavor. And I lived down in Mobile for a while, and Mobile in New Orleans has this thing about arguing over who did Mardi Gras first. But it's
Yeah,
but to
Mobile
me
did it
it's
first.
But to me, it's not about being first. It's about who does it best.
Right. You're right on that. You're right on that.
Yeah. But anyway, it's so, man, just to kind of go off into the Green Mantles and introduce people to that, tell me a little bit about like the formulation of the band and like how you started finding the guys that would come to be a part of the Green Mantles.
Well, I first started playing in bands in the very late 80s, and then there was some guys that I played with in high school and during that time period that were part of the original Green Mantles, which started in 2002. And then there's been so many people from so many different areas. Like for a brief time, well, I'll say a brief time, off and on, I've lived in Fort Lauderdale as well. So there's a couple guys, Mike and Pete Campbell, who I did a lot of shows with, who are from that area. And then in this area, like the current lineup has Lance Reynolds and Cannon Blue. They're from Ocean Springs. And then Chip Bullard, who's from New Orleans. And actually, there's this new guy I just started playing with, this named Simon Palmer. He's from the Ocean Springs area as well.
Okay.
But as the years went on, because it's been so long, there's been so many different lineups. It was, there were people that were located, like if we did a show, and even one time we did a show in California, and I have a friend that came in and played with me there. So there would be various different lineups depending on where. Like I know a guy, one of the guys that I played with in high school, Tom Klopf, he lives in Prague in the Czech Republic. And so we did some shows out there and in Germany,
Oh,
and just
wow.
kind of, yeah, we started to do, well, that started us doing more stuff in Europe, which we play a lot of, I say a lot, but I mean, the last maybe 5 or 6 years did a lot of shows in Scotland. So because of all the different places we had been, like been to England and we went to Ireland and everything, but Edinburgh, Scotland, which is the capital of Scotland, there's actually a bar there called the Green Mantle.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was kind of a strange coincidence.
Yeah.
But that was a city that also, there were certain people there that I would come and like, I played there last summer. And if my guys from here couldn't make it, then some people there would be, oh, we'll be Green Mantles while you're here. So.
That's great, man. And like just I guess to back it up earlier to those high school days and getting into it, like those bands before, were those like cover bands mixed with some originals, or what did that look like to that point, to the Green
Well,
Mantles?
when I first started playing, it was, I think, it's funny, you got original bands, you got cover bands, but then you also have bands that are almost both. And I would point to, just to use as an example, I guess Metallica is a band that does a lot of covers, but they also, of course, are known for their original material as well. And
Sure.
so when we first started in the late 80s, we were doing, mainly originals, but, your whole set would be 25 minutes long. You were doing punk stuff. And so you'd have to throw in, some Ramones or whatever Misfits or whatever to fill out your set.
Absolutely.
And so we did that for a while, and we were that kind of a band, I guess, kind of like a punk, sort of a punk kind of thing. And then in the early, maybe 92 or so, we got into industrial music, which at first all our friends were really impressed by it. But I think that, we kind of went off on a tangent, and I think, it's like one of those things where everyone started taking LSD or something and thought the songs needed to be 10 minutes long and,
Right.
have no beginning and end.
Yeah.
And so we drifted. I was in bands that I'm really not very proud of throughout the 90s. And then in 2002, early 2002, we just sort of looked back and said, okay, this is where people liked it and this is what people didn't like. And so when we did Green Mantles, we had a sort of formula to Green Mantles that all the songs had to be dance songs. They could be originals, they could be covers, whatever. But
Right.
we want to play. We're playing. You're mainly playing bars. I mean, sometimes you play other, but you're playing bars. You're playing parties. So as long as you can dance to it, it doesn't matter if it's, what else is going on necessarily. You can get away with it,
Right. And man, like just to kind of go back to what you were saying earlier about it was kind of a geographic thing for y'all, depending on who would be in playing that
Sure.
night. I've got a friend of mine. The band's it's after himself, but depending on where he is in the States or wherever he's playing, there's no telling who might be in a company.
Sure.
And
Sure.
I think that's a beautiful thing when other singer or songwriters or people in other bands when you can have that camaraderie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it gives. You get different. I'm always open to suggestions. So there's songs that we do that other people have come up. Most of them, most of the originals I wrote, but there are also songs from a variety of different people or whatever. If someone suggests something and it's good or it's fun, I'm all for it. I'm open to any ideas. So when you bring in people like the Campbell Brothers, who I play with in South Florida, they're almost like progressive. They almost, this is going to sound weird, but they sound almost if you were to mix something like Godflesh and Napalm Death with Frank Zappa or something. They're
That
real,
is, that's a crazy mix.
way out there. It's way like very progressive music. So when they play with Green Mantles, it's something totally different. And I think they can, regardless, they bring in a little bit of what they're doing into it. So even though it's, the Green Mantles is a simpler kind of blues-based thing or whatever. They're still kind of bringing in that vibe. And then, the guys that are in the band now, Lance is a little more of an 80s kind of guy. And my bass player, Chip, he's a little more metal, So you get all those influences in there.
Yeah,
The
man.
different people you play with in different areas or whatever all have their opinions as to what they think Green Mantles should sound like. And I'm usually open to that.
Yeah, that's crazy, man, to have like that different, like an 80s, and then one guy's heavy in the metal
Yeah.
and then very progressive. Like I'm just trying to picture like, well, we saw him in South Florida and we caught him in Ocean Springs, New Orleans. It was a totally different vibe.
And sometimes it's not what you think either, because like using the example of the guy Mike in Florida, he plays, not always, but he plays a 9-string guitar, and but he's still playing. He might be even going more in a country blues direction than the guy who maybe, like, say, has a punk background, because the punk guy might see it and say, we could get a lot heavier.
Yeah.
Whereas, the guy in South Florida might be like, I do so much more heavy, progressive stuff. Let's do something that's not that at all. This
Yeah.
is not that at all. So that's not necessarily the heaviest version of the band,
Cool, man. That's
so.
interesting. And so just from there, man, like Green Mantles started playing New Orleans, Ocean Springs area, like branching out. How did the networking start? What set that off?
Well, originally, I had come back from, let's see, I guess I'd briefly lived in Atlanta. So I'd come back from there, and I lived in South Florida before that for a little while. So we did a couple shows in this area, in the New Orleans area. But then we started playing in South Florida a lot, and it was just easier to get gigs, or just we knew more people. And then somewhere along the lines, I started going out. Like maybe I that's why I played a place called Squeaky Lizard, and the owner of the place is this the guy Lance who plays drums with us now. So, but through that, I started to meet a lot of people out in Ocean Springs, and even though the majority of the people in the band, at least in the first incarnation, and even half the people that are involved now, were from New Orleans. We didn't play New Orleans as much. You know, we played, there's a place called Checkpoint Charlie that we would always play. We've always played there forever, but we're almost really not part of the New Orleans scene so much. You know, we tend to be, we do play with those bands sometimes, but most of our friends, for whatever reason, seem to be, it's really three cities. It's Ocean Springs, Edinburgh, Scotland, and Fort Lauderdale is where we knew the most people. And then probably New Orleans after that.
And so, just as that progressed, and getting out to California and even Europe, how did that take place?
What we were doing at the time, the California gig came about because we were, me and the guy that I founded Green Mammals with, he got really deep into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I was doing it with him more for fun on my part. And we went to the Pan Ams, which is like the Pan Am, these big games, a big thing where you have thousands of people come out on the West Coast for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And so I went out there, we drove out there to do that, and then I booked some shows when I was out there. So I played with my friend Scott Dernancourt, who was originally, well, he was actually originally from Detroit, but I knew him from New Orleans, and then he was living in California. So when we went to California, I was like, yeah, man, let's do Green Mammals out here. You know, let's do it since I'm coming out here anyway. And then my friend Tom that lives in Prague, I had a discussion with him, and he's like, well, he had played keyboards and he played drums. And he's like, well, dude, why don't you come out here and we'll play Prague, we'll play Berlin or whatever. And so I went and did that. And I mean, Europe is really good, you know, for music. It's just whatever you're doing, you know, it seems like there's a big crowd for it. And so then after
The way
that,
that they respect musicians too is totally different from what I hear. I haven't been on a stage over there, but just from everything that I hear, it is, they are in tune.
absolutely. And no matter even whatever you're doing, you know, whatever you're doing, you can probably find a crowd there. And so it worked in those places. And then I was like, all right, well, I want to do, you know, because the band, the Green Mantle's name even kind of connected to the sort of Gaelic history, you know, and it connected to Ireland and it connected to Scotland. So I was like, all right, let's do Ireland, let's do England, let's do Scotland. And we did that on a few occasions, but Edinburgh, which that city in Scotland is just one of the, it's just, you could go there with no gigs and play and get gigs. You know, you could just show up and start playing. It's such a artistic and a sort of musical mecca. I mean, there's just people playing everywhere. So it's so easy to play there, and then the people are really, really friendly, really great people. And so it just became like I would go and stay in hostels for a few weeks at a time and just play everywhere I could play. And, you know, I've done that, I guess, about once a year for the last 6 years or so.
Cool, man. Let me ask you this, is just the difference between American and European culture. I've been thinking about it. I don't know if it's maybe that the European culture is it's an older culture, and it seems to have a more reverence for the arts, or you know, and since America, I mean, we're kind of, you know, it really is a me kind of culture. And you have to make an American care.
You're right. You're absolutely right. You know, I remember reading about the Stones talking about how the first time they came to America, I think they were playing with James Brown of all people, and just like it stunned them because they were considered, you know, really over the top the way that they would try to sell the songs in England or whatever. But when they got to the States, like, man, people in the States will break their neck trying to entertain you. And I think that it is the case that, there's so much cultural diversity in the States that it isolates people, So you got
It
people
does.
that, it's hard, and it's hard for you, to get from one place to another. Like, I live outside of New Orleans at the moment in a place where there really isn't anything going on, So there's a lot of people in the States that are in places that not much is going on. The cities aren't as conducive to foot traffic, which something I noticed in Europe, and I think this makes a big difference too, is that shows run on time. So if you have a show that starts at 9, I've seen shows that start at 9 and they're supposed to be over at 11:30 and they'll have four bands, and somehow that works. They backline everything. They know that, okay, people need to catch the bus at midnight or whatever. So they'll do it in such a way that we've backlined, like you don't have to drag a bunch of equipment everywhere. They've got the equipment there. And if a show runs quickly and professionally, it's more entertaining. Are you a musician? Okay. So you, I'm sure, you've played plenty of shows where you sit around, till 3 in the morning waiting to play or whatever, and that turns people off,
And I mean, like, when you start, especially in, like, right now in Columbus, it's a redeveloping music scene in Columbus, Mississippi. And there's a bar that's recently started booking shows again, and like everything was lined out. You had three bands going. Well, the middle band didn't behave. And so everybody who came to see the last band, well, they're out. Well, now we got to be here till closing time to hear them. And so, I mean, there's that. So, I mean, with the American culture, I'm not hating on it. I'm a part of it, but it is, we are so entertained, and I think sometimes it's an ego thing.
It is. Well, it's a more individualistic kind of culture, which is cool in its own way. But yeah, it tends to be every man for himself a little bit. But something that I've noticed is that when I was first playing shows, like in the late 80s, early 90s, whatever, there was a lot more stage management. So someone would, if you had three bands, the sound guy or somebody would point to you and say, one more song, and it'd be time to get off the stage. Now it's just like, well, just do as you feel. So
Yeah, it can
that's
be a
terrible.
madhouse.
Yeah, it's terrible for your audience. And if you don't put, if that's what the audience is coming to see, well, I came, and I've heard it from so many people, not just with shows I play, just even with bigger bands. I've heard people say, well, they said, 11 o'clock, and now it's 1. I don't want to be here anymore,
I got work tomorrow.
I've got another life. I don't have to, so you make it tough for people when people are going to just stay home.
Yeah, man. And it's another thing. I don't know, like, all the experiences that you've had in Europe, but I love the stories from, like, those listening rooms and those, maybe Green Mantle is an example of that, like a really small pub where it's almost like when the artist steps on stage, you could hear a pin drop.
Well, that's funny too. Yeah, you got places that have that kind of vibe where people will be very reverential to the music. And then, of course, there's other places that are a little more, like what you'd expect here. There's a place called the Royal Oak in Scotland where, I mean, it helps to know people, but you don't really have to know anybody. I mean, if you say you play, you'll get in. But you walk in and it's a small club, but it's packed, packed to the gills. And they've got a guitar and they got a piano, and sometimes they got some percussion stuff just lying around, no real stage. And they say, oh, you play? Well, okay. Oh, well, they know me because I've played there enough times. But it'd be like, come grab the guitar. Let's do a song. What key is it in, or whatever? And so the whole bar will, if you don't have a drummer, the whole bar will play percussion for you. So, so you've got that sing along kind of thing. And I think it has to do, it's a drinking culture, but it's a different drinking culture. There's a lot more, community, I guess, to it is a way to say it. I don't know. So yeah, there's a lot of places like that though. Like, I actually, one of the groups we play with is they're called the Eucaneers, and it was these ukulele group in Scotland, and there's probably 20 people that are officially in it. And so you go into the bar, and if you have a ukulele, or if they have an extra one, they give the ukulele, and you just play along. And we stumbled across that and started playing with them too, you know. Oh, okay. So there's already that many people playing, plus whoever else is in the bar, and everyone's just, their people are going, oh, I'll sing along and drink to this, you know.
Yeah. I guess with what are some of your favorite stories? Like, was there any time there when you were just catching another musician or a band and you just had your hair blown back? Maybe they were playing something like country or blues, something that, you know, naturally would come from here, and you hear it over there and you're just like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, there was a guy named, Terry Towles, I think I'm pronouncing his last name right. And he was very much like a blues kind of guy, and definitely reminded me of something from this area. There's another guy that books some of the shows that I do over there. His name's Phil Ramsey. And he would kind of float around from instrument to instrument, but he does like a lot of ska kind of things, which I guess is kind of almost like a blowback to the connection they have to Jamaica or whatever, you
right.
know. So he brings that in, and but then there's also kind of some Americana stuff that floats in there as well. My favorite experience there, as far as like another band, is like, I guess it's kind of a well-known band, but the Exploited were playing. And it was really cool because I got to get up and sing on the song with them. I was like, oh, that's nice, you know.
Awesome.
How cool is this?
Yeah.
You know, because they're just local. The thing is, they're just locals, you know. It's like I grew up listening to band. Like, I knew the Exploited forever. And it's like, oh, you want to meet the bass player? He works right here at the place you're playing. I'm like, oh, okay. You know. And it's that the people there, as I said, everybody coming from there is so damn friendly. So
yeah.
But they really appreciate, though, a lot of, like you're saying, the Americana kind of stuff. There's a lot of people that really like that, you know, sort of blues type deal or whatever, country or whatever you want to, rockabilly.
Yeah.
They appreciate it almost more than the Americans do, you know?
Yeah. I guess it be that way sometimes.
Yeah, sure, sure.
It comes right out of your back door, and you don't really take it for what it is.
Yeah, you take it for granted a little bit.
Yeah. And so, man, what about you? What are some of your favorite experiences that you've had personally on the stage over there? Or just a crazy travel journey story?
Well, we definitely have played some shows where, you know, it's packed house. You can get everybody to sing. We have songs that kind of have a call and response kind of thing going on, not just covers, but we have originals that are like that. So you can get the originals. You can get people to sing along, and it's nice when you're, you know, you're all the way overseas and you've got a room full of people and they're singing along to your stuff.
Yeah.
Or you come back, you know, years later or whatever, oh, do that song. I remember that song
yeah.
that you guys did. So that's really, really cool. But yeah, there's the thing that that gets you is just the plane travel. You know, you wind up spending, you know, hours and hours getting, sometimes you get stuck in places. I mean, we had to spend the night in Dublin, in the Dublin airport one night, and, you know, things like that happen. Sometimes, like, we got into Amsterdam one time, and they did get me the guitar the next day, but I didn't have a show anyway that night. But yeah, sometimes they lose the instrument, you know, so you have to hope the instrument comes along. Great thing about touring over there is you really don't have to bring anything. You know, you can bring your instrument, of course, but they almost always have back lines.
Yeah.
Which makes a huge difference, you know. But I've kind of focused more after floating around, I've kind of focused more just on, you know, the one Edinburgh, Scotland, because, you know, you get to know people more and more there. It's the same thing. We tour somewhat, but what we usually do is just find a region. And that's like, I hadn't been back to Fort Lauderdale or that area in a long, long time. But in April, we're doing a show in South Beach. So that's like the first time to come back there for a while. But
good plug.
You know, you get to meet people, you know, in whatever area it is. And, you know, if you float around too much, you may or may not really connect to an area, or you might play places that are kind of dead one night and then good the next. So if you know a bunch of people, it helps, obviously, you know.
And so what about this with I know a lot of bands that they don't really like playing in their hometown. Like they will. Let's just say if you were based here in Columbus, you might book here 5, 6 times for that year.
Sure, we're
That's the
like that.
goal. You'll end up doing a favor, but the goal is to, we're a home band, we're proud to be from here, but we are trying to get out there.
Yeah, we're kind of, I guess we're kind of, as they regional, and is even when it comes to something overseas, it's more region, you know, it's that one Scottish region or that South Florida region. So we've done California, we've done Prague or whatever, but we probably won't go, you know, we might go back, but I mean, those are places that, you know, we just happened to play once. Like we played Memphis once, you know, but it's, yeah, it's just more like, you know, we'll, when I say, I guess I say we're regional, but not necessarily just regional in the area that we're from. Like I said, it's those three main, well, four, I guess. You got New Orleans, you got the Ocean Springs area, Biloxi, whatever, the Edinburgh area, and the Fort Lauderdale area. So you got four different, you know, regions that we're likely to play in. You know, but we do less shows. Like I said, we're closest to New Orleans, well, at least the main lineup is the closest to New Orleans, and we probably do the least amount of shows there.
Yeah, it's crazy how that works.
It is strange. I don't know why, but yeah, that's how it is.
I don't know. It's so different from musician to musician or band to band. Like, I know some of my favorite bands. They may be local to, let's just say, Birmingham, and so you can literally catch them almost any night of the week in Birmingham, and then on the weekend they travel.
Sure.
And then you have the bands, you know, that are the exact opposite of that. And so I guess I think age has a lot to do with it. It gets harder.
Sure, it does. It does. It definitely does. That's the thing too. We do shows like we play in Pascagoula a lot of times at the Celtic, the place called the Celtic, and a really nice guy that runs that
I
place. I
used
don't
to
know if
work
you
at
ever.
Ingles.
Okay, so if you've ever, like the Celtic is, well, I don't know, if you worked at Ingles, you might remember Thunder's Tavern. That used to be a big thing over there, but yeah, there was Thunder's Tavern, and then there's the Celtic, and
And you had Jacks on the tracks.
okay, all right, yeah. So you know that's close to Mobile, so that's about 2 hours from where I live. So we'll do shows there. Sometimes we'll do a show there and then do a show in Houma the next night. So Houma is an hour or so past where I'm at now. So you could be on the road 4, 5, 6, 7 hours just to play a show or two, you know, over a weekend. And so yeah, it takes its toll on you, I think.
Since 2002 is Green Mountain's been established, so 18 years been
Yes.
trucking. And
Yep.
just with you and we'll just, you know, I guess with the bandmates circulating, to talk a little bit about your process with songwriting and you know, whether it be lyrics or the riffs, how does some of that stuff come together for you? I know it's going to look a little different each time, but maybe talk about one of the songs that's shared here on the show.
Well, okay, I guess like a song that I would say, well, I'd probably send you Swamp Thing. It's one of the songs we're kind of known for. That, you know, it's about the comic book, actually, but that was written on from a drum machine, which we sometimes will use drum tracks as well, like electronic, because I was always into Depeche Mode and stuff like that too. So we'll kind of throw in some of that vibe, depending if our drummer can't make it or whatever. But a lot of the songwriting comes from like I'll get a drum machine track, or I'll put together a track, and then I'll just start playing along with it to get the riff that way. But then there's other songs that are more collaborative, and there's a song called Cheerless Witch, for example, which this woman I know in South Florida had come up with the concept for the Cheerless Witch, which is this sort of Grinch kind of thing that she was doing for a play that she was putting on. And then this guy, Travis Newbell, wrote most of the lyrics, and then I wrote the music. And the idea was, okay, come up with an Elvis kind of song or whatever. And so we did that. So that's a collaborative song. So, you know, you have Cheerless Witch that came out of, and we did, there's a movie called Overtime, which is coming out, I guess, sometime this year, that we were asked to do the sound, like a song on the soundtrack for. And
cool, man.
Yeah. So it's a guy, a comic book writer out of England who was doing it. But I was like, okay, here's my basic riff idea. And, you know, here's the kind of lyrical content. But then my drummer's like, okay, here's a cool pattern that I had in my head. And then my bass player, Chip, said, he's like, oh, well, look, let's do like a John Carpenter bass line for this, like something John Carpenter would do in one of his movies or something. So that was an example of a collaborative thing. But I guess the majority of the songs are written off of I'll get some kind of drum beat, electron beat or whatever, and just jam out a riff and then come up with, okay, here's the words to it or whatever. Or maybe I'll have an idea. It's like, okay, we're going to write a song about this. Like, we have a song that's a birthday song. So it's like, okay, because that's always good when you're playing live. And so it's like, all right, write a song about birthdays. I'm like, okay, come up with a birthday song. And it has this kind of vibe to it or whatever. But yeah, so that's the majority of the way things are written.
Swamp Thing, and then getting to write the soundtrack for a comic book style movie. You a big comic book guy?
I have been off and on. There was a time, especially when I was younger, that I was really into them. You know, I had a lot of them. And then I guess like the 70s, 80s or whatever, I used to go to this used bookstore that had all kinds of old comics, and I was really into that. But then I'm kind of like, you know, I don't keep up with it now as much. But yeah, I always liked the Swamp Thing character. I liked how the Ramones did. Well, it was a cover, really, but the Ramones did Spider-Man, and they're from Forest Hills, and Peter Parker was from Forest Hills. So Swamp Thing was like, okay, that's based out of Thibodeau, which is not too far from here. I was like, all right, well, Homa. I'm sorry, it's based out of Homa, and so. It's like, all right, well, a band from here should do the Swamp Thing song.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah, because ain't nobody going to know it like you know it.
Yeah. And so, you know, and so I guess, you know, it's not in the songs as much as probably people perceive it to be, because I've had people ask me if we, you know, you guys are kind of like a horror punk band or something. We're not really a horror band, but it's just that, yeah, I was always into horror movies, and I'm in the comic books to a degree and into that kind of thing. So you'll see sort of some of that stuff makes its way in, that, you know, that kind of culture, I guess, makes its way into some of the material.
Y'all ought to play Mobile, man.
Yeah, you know, I've never played in Mobile. I don't think I played in Saraland one time. Never played out in Mobile.
Yeah. I could hook you up with a couple of bands that run that circuit, and y'all would mesh well.
Oh, very cool, man. Well, as I said, some of the guys, you know, live 30 minutes away in Ocean Springs. What band are you in?
I'm not in a band. Like, I got a... Okay. I'm just doing the singer-songwriter route right now.
Oh, cool.
And hopefully this year, like, I've taken on, like, a lot of roles. I was planning on dropping the album, getting it recorded and it being out at the end of summer, but I'm not sure on that anymore.
Yeah, do you find it more difficult to do solo? Like, is it more scary to get on stage for you, or easier?
I've the last few times I played, I rarely get on stage by myself. As far as accompaniment, I just usually I'll take a lead guitarist.
Right.
Because, like, me, personally, if I'm doing 30 minutes, hour and a half,
yeah,
I would get tired of myself.
Sure.
With an acoustic guitar.
Sure.
Because I'm not gonna blow you away for an hour and a half.
Yeah, I know the feeling. I know what you're talking about.
And so if any, you know, it gives me a little room to breathe.
Absolutely,
But
yeah, because that.
I prefer being by myself, man. I've been in four different bands. Never had any bad breakups. It was life changes for those guys, and it was time for them to go. And you'd replace them, and maybe it would die, and you would start up another band out of the embers. And but lately, it's just been, you know what? With the album and with everything that I'm going to try to do in the future with music, I'm going to write the music myself. I'll have everything prepared, and if someone wants to come and play or be on the album, they can write, or they can play what I wrote.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's, you know, so this, we do have a core of the band, like mainly me and Chip, and to a little bit lesser degree nowadays Lance, because he doesn't do all the shows. But yeah, like I said, it's kind of loose, you know. So, and then there's occasions, not too often, but every once in a while I'll do it solo. And I would think all I'd have to do is take the S off the name, but people still call it Green Mammals, so maybe they think it's my name. I don't know. But you know, so it's always a little, for me, yeah, it helps to have at least one other person out there. You know, it's always a little strange when you're by yourself, you know. But you know, it's like, and like you're saying too, you know, it's like there's only so much you can do. If I was the world's greatest guitar player, I could probably keep you happy for 2 hours with just an acoustic guitar, but you
Yeah,
know.
and I've got a couple of friends, they'll do the loop tracks, or
Oh,
they may come out of a drum track.
sure.
And that's fine and well, but dude, I'm not interested in taking the time to like put on a show like that.
Yeah, and it's in anything. Definitely, when you're doing the loops, if you do them live, it's a tight wire act. You know, you're on thin ice.
And he
You can,
does. And
yeah.
I tell him, the last time I saw him, it was maybe last year, and it had been probably a year since I had seen him before that. And his improvement and how tight everything, I was blown away. Like it was really well done. You could tell he put the time in. And he was like, "Man, you got the pedals and everything you need at the house to do it. You ought to start." And I was like, "Man, I like to do like a drum beat loop and little things," but I was like, "You built a whole song."
And it's like, so when you're doing the tracks, there's always a little bit of, at least I try to put in a little bit of leeway, but and it's not that tough, like as I used to think, because when I was playing in industrial bands in the 90s, of course the technology wasn't there either, but there were times that they were disasters, so it made me nervous. But then somewhere in the, I don't know, mid 2000s or so, I started to incorporate that a little bit more, because you know, like, oh, the drummer can't make it, but we've got the bass player. We'll, you know, we'll just use the drum tracks or whatever. And but I also like the aesthetic of it too. I like, you said, I like Depeche Mode. I like that Skinny Puppy. I like all those kind of bands that did that sort of thing. And it keeps you honest, because there is some leeway within the tracks. You can screw up and people won't know necessarily. But there are certain moments where if you go off, it's gonna be noticeable. So you're forced to, okay, know it as a drum track, know it as, and then know it with, you know, your regular drummer and then fill-in drummers. And so, or you're by yourself even. So then you've been thrown into any kind of situation, and hopefully figure a way to survive no matter what's thrown at you.
Yeah, man. But I think it's the Music Box is the place I'm talking about.
Oh yeah, I've heard about that,
That's
Alabama Music Box.
yeah, that's down in Mobile.
Yeah.
I'll share, I'll float that around and see what I can do to get y'all. But the horror scene there, like
Yeah.
all my friends in Mobile in that area, this past Halloween I went down there. They always throw a hell of a Halloween party.
Oh,
And so I
cool,
was like,
yeah.
I think y'all would have like a immediate following for that.
Oh, that's great, man. Well, you know, I appreciate it very much. We start, our first show was Halloween of 2002. We've always done a Halloween show, you know. So, and actually, this last Halloween show, we did it at the Celtic in Pascagoula, and we came back, and my bass player called me about 5:30 in the morning because we didn't realize, you'd think you'd know, but in late October there was it's really just a tropical storm, I guess, but it didn't seem like it was that big a deal. And we went through some weather and we got home. So he called me at like 5:30 in the morning. He's like, dude, so you never believe it. This pine tree fell and came, you know, inches from crushing me in my house. And I'm like, and I was like, well, that's okay. I can beat that, because when I got home, two oak trees fell through my house while I was in the room. Like, the ceiling fell on me and everything. And
jeez, dude.
Yeah, so I came, I would say, 3 or 4 seconds, because I was walking towards, and then all of a sudden it fell, and luckily it was an oak tree. A pine tree goes so quick. Like, you don't have time. It's just going to cut right through your house. You're going to die.
Just that you're in the safest place that you think you could possibly be. You're in your home.
Yeah.
It's like, because a tree's going to fall any second.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that had to be surreal. So,
yeah, it was crazy. And so we had come back, and it was probably 4:30 or something in the morning, and all of a sudden, one oak tree fell, hit the other oak tree, and they both fell into right in the room that I was, you know, right in my room. And the interesting thing was, we had all our equipment downstairs because we had just come back from the show, and I was too lazy to drag it up, you know, whatever. So none of the equipment got messed up. And I didn't have a scratch on me, but I, you know, the ceiling had hit me in the glass from, like, there was a skylight. The part of the tree went through the skylight, so I had glass all over me. But for some reason, not a scratch.
Huh.
So it's like, okay. Yeah. So that was like Halloween. That was like, in some ways, the ultimate Halloween show, because you get a little, you know, a tree attacks you. A tree attacked both of us at the end. So
yeah. Almost not a great ending at all.
No, but hey, we were alive. Yeah, so like, we were like, okay. And it was weird.
It sucks, because, but it could have sucked a whole lot more.
Oh, hell yeah. And it was, strange thing about it was that it was one of these storms that no one even thought was a big, like, see, we went and played, and we didn't think it was that. We ran through some weather, but it was no big deal. And no one really, there was a little bit of destruction here and there, but for the most part, you know, I mean, I'm lucky I had insurance, so it wasn't the end of the world for me. But, you know, it was both of us. He's, you know, the fact that he had called me and came, I mean, inches from that hitting. If it had hit where he was at, because he was in a duplex, it would have taken the entire place out. And he's like, I can't believe it. And I'm like, dude, check this out. Come over. Look at this. And no one else had any problems. Everyone's like, what do you mean? It was just some bad weather, huh?
Yeah. You know?
So
yeah, I was I lived down in Mobile, and the last part of it, that's when I worked at Ingalls, but I was down there for 6 years, and I think during that time we had two hurricanes and two tropical storms. I evacuated for the last one, and right when I left, I wanted to turn around, and like, cause it, you know, I was weather app. It had darted right, and it was going to hit Florida, and I was like, well, I could go back. Well, I'm already halfway home. I'll just go home and visit family.
Right, yeah. Well, we had stayed, me and my brother had stayed for Katrina, so we were there, which we really probably shouldn't have, you know, but we stayed, and we knew which direction the wind was going to blow, so if the trees came down, they wouldn't have hit the house, but it's just funny to think that something like Katrina made it through. You know, but then this little storm, I don't even know the name of the storm, and it nearly took me out, nearly took the bass player out. You know, it's very strange.
Yeah.
So everyone's like, wait a second, what storm at the end of October? Because it's unusual too to have any kind of tropical thing hit here that late.
Yeah.
You know, in Florida maybe, but not here.
Right.
So, but yeah, you see, that's the thing you always got to think about. There's the rising water. Well, I knew we were always safe from the water, you know, where I was at, not in New Orleans, but where I was at, well, safe from the water.
Yeah.
But boy, trees, especially pine trees, be careful with them.
Learned your lesson.
Take you out quick. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, man, to start wrapping this thing up and getting it on out the door, just to tell people the best ways to find your music, and how to connect with you on social media, and just to be aware of what y'all have going on.
Okay, on Facebook, we're Tribe of the Green Mammals, or Green Mammals. And Reverb Nation were Green Mantles. SoundCloud were Green Mantles. And there's a Green Mantles station, channel on YouTube. So
Okay.
that's where all our stuff is.
Well, all right. Well, man, anything else to add or subtract?
No, I just, thank you so much. It's been nice talking to you,
Yeah,
definitely.
man.
And
It's like right when you told me you was from the Ocean Springs, New Orleans area, I was like, we're about to have a good time.
absolutely,
See, I
sure.
was like, I'm not from there. I've spent quite a most of my adult life was spent down there.
Okay, and where are you from originally, or?
North Alabama. It's
Okay.
around Tuscaloosa if you're halfway.
Yeah, sure.
I'm 45 minutes west of there.
Okay, all right,
Yeah,
yeah,
right on the
absolutely.
Alabama Mississippi state line.
Yeah, I know the area. It's been a while since I've been that way, but yeah, I definitely know
Yeah.
what you're talking about.
But yeah, and so like right when you said that, I was like, we're gonna be able to jam.
Definitely, man.
But yeah. Well, Brian, thank you so much, man.
All right, well, thank you.
All right. It's been another episode. Peace out, brother.
All right, man.
News and notes. As always, if you haven't done so already, I would ask that you would rate, review, subscribe to the show. Whatever platform it is that you listen to on, if it's YouTube, subscribe, leave a comment, give a shout out. Really appreciate you being involved. You can also find us on social media. Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And we got things related to the show, and we got our sketches that we do just to make you laugh or to make you think that we're a whole lot weirder. Or it's actual weirdness, I guess. Also, go check out Green Mantles. Go find them on Facebook and support what they have going on YouTube and SoundCloud and where you can find all their music. And if you're in the area, go catch the show. Go support them live. All right, that's going to do it for me. We're going to share a song called In Too Deep. And I'm out of here, guys. Peace out.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.